it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we're happening, man, at the Whitmore Country Club out west. We are here for the Ted Savage Golf Classic, the Cardinals Care Golf Classic. And we go to the guest line in hour two of the show. It is Chris and Amy, the host of Sports Open Line, Redbird Rush Hour, and Cardinals pre- and post-game coverage is Matt Pauley, and he is with us now on KMOX. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
So, yeah, man, won a series against the A's. That's nice.
Yeah, the A's came in overall over the last few weeks playing some pretty good baseball. They didn't play great the series before, but the big picture lately, they've been playing good baseball. I don't think they're a very good matchup for the Cardinals either, just the way that they approach things, their aggressiveness at the plate. So I would argue that was a very good 3 days overall for the Cardinals.
Well, that was a fun 3 days, and this weekend's going to be fun because Yadier Molina will return as a visiting coach this weekend.
Yeah, all the Hall of Fame stuff is going on, and he's got some connections to some people there. So this is good, and I think, look, there's people who try to make it more than it is. I really think this is Oliver Marmol really enjoying having a guy like Molina in the dugout. And, Jimmy Crooks is here now, so it's an opportunity to get him around one of your young catchers, which is great. I see kind of the sarcastic messaging on social media. Oh, it's just the Cardinals trying to do something to sell tickets. You really think somebody's going to buy a ticket because Yadier Molina happens to be sitting in the dugout? Like, that's crazy stuff right there. So it's fun. It's good to have him around. I think most people associated with the team would like him to be more involved than he has been. So I'm glad he's going to be here this weekend.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. And I think on Oliver Marmol's part, it's cool that he even suggests this, that it's his idea and that he wants, Yadi to be in the dugout because – and Matt, we talk about this all the time, the amount of criticism he gets as the manager, which is the nature of the job, getting criticism happens. But it shows quite a bit of confidence that you allow a player who is as popular as Yadier Molina and who some fans are always talking about being the manager of this team, letting him in the dugout.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot the first time, and Ollie is very comfortable in his own skin. He had a comment that he made, I think it was to Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic, where he mentioned his faith and basically said he believes that, if he is supposed to be the manager of the Cardinals, then there's nobody that can take it from him. And if he's not supposed to be the manager of the Cardinals, well, then he's not supposed to be the manager of the Cardinals. And all he can do is continue to go forward on an everyday basis. And, whether that's a faith-based type thing or whether that's just having confidence in who you are and knowing that the universe is going to put you in the right spot, I think it's a pretty healthy way to look at life.
Yeah, and obviously you can do things to compromise your job security if you're, not smart about it. There's that element. But to Ollie's point, it seems that he's very genuine, very approachable with the Gas House Gang and him joining KMOX for, 30, 40 minutes every Tuesday. He's as honest as you can expect a manager to be. He invited Brant Brown, the hitting coach, to join on Tuesday. You mentioned Yadier Molina. It does feel like Ollie truly has his own vibe is overused, but he has his own vibe. He has his own way of being a Cardinals manager while still fitting into the Cardinals system.
Yes, and he's trying to do what he thinks is best for the team to win games right now and win games long term. And he's not naive. He knows the general thought. He sits there and looks at the comments that are coming in on the stream as he's hosting. And So he is very aware that there is certainly a segment of the Cardinals fan base that is not a fan of his, and I think he does a pretty good job of placing that off to the side and doing what he thinks is best for the Cardinals.
So, I mean, you heard what Brown, the hitting coach of the Cardinals, said. We talked a lot about the Jordan Walker thing. Haven't had the chance to get your thoughts on this, Matt, but it sounded to me like he was and is frustrated with the way things have gone. And he didn't single out Walker. You know, we asked him about that player in particular, but do you get the same sense that maybe the coaching staff is a little frustrated with him and maybe some of the other younger players?
Yes, I think frustration is the number one word on this thing, and it did manifest itself in, you know, specifics about Walker, but I think to your point, there's probably a bunch of guys you could have asked him about, and the answers were going to be somewhat the same. I think it's a little bit more pronounced with Walker. It's damning when the hitting coach talks about the preparation that needs to go in to, you know, any given game, and maybe that's not happening with an individual. But then beyond that, just the fact that you got the sense from Brown that they weren't real happy with the way some of the hitters go about practicing. And look, another one of my pet peeves here, because I've seen it all over social media, you know, people thinking that this is a high school football coach who, you know, if a player isn't doing something, they can blow a whistle and tell him to go run laps. Like, that's not the way it works in Major League Baseball. These players are their own things, and there are not coaches and not if a player doesn't want to do a certain type of thing in the afternoon, he basically doesn't have to do it. And if a player doesn't want to take it upon himself to practice in a way where you're turning up the pitching machine to 100 miles per hour and you're taking three steps towards it, if a guy doesn't want to do it, like, there's nobody who's going to force him to do it. So, and it's that way for every organization. This is not something that is unique to the St. Louis Cardinals. But what is I think we're seeing that it's going to be really important for player development to get guys ready for the big leagues and get guys ready for the big leagues, not just in the sense that they know how to, like, play in the big leagues, but also that they know how to continue to practice and perform and prepare and all these things when they get there. So that's part of the process that's going on right now with Heim Bloom and the redo of player development. There's issues. There's a lot of issues that have developed, and they're trying to work through them.
So when we talk about that, the individual is responsible for himself. The counter argument would be, well, it is the manager's job, it is the coaching staff's job to get the player to buy in. How much do you believe in that?
I believe in it in the sense that that is part of the job, but there's also going to be, if a guy just won't buy in, there's a lot of, like, this isn't all bad. So there's a bunch of guys who have bought in. Like, Alec Burleson has completely bought in on everything. And this has been, I was talking about this the other day. You go back a couple years, Burleson, when Albert Pujols was around, saw Pujols doing the thing where he, you know, had the pitch machine at super high velocity and was taking two steps forward, and Burleson's like, wow, that's a way to practice, and he started implementing that into what he was doing. So, and we're seeing Burleson have a career year. It's not like the entire team has just decided to tune out what's going on, but I do think there are some players on the team that are not putting in the type of practice and preparation that the coaches want. So that, I guess the point, if every single player was just tuning out the coach, then I think that's a problem with the coach. There's something going on that players are not reacting to it. If there is a small number of maybe some of the younger guys who are wanting to just kind of continue to do it their way, then I think that comes back more to the player.
Matt, I think it's fair to say that what Brent Brown said on Gas House about the players and their preparation, and of course Jordan Walker, it probably took a lot of people by surprise. It felt a little bit like in-house stuff. And I know you don't want to read too much into something, but generally when in-house stuff starts to leak out into the media, it's not always a great sign that things are going swimmingly, just historically.
Yeah, I think it was calculated. I think they went in. I could be wrong. This is 100% my opinion, and I'm not 100% sure that I'm right on this one. This is kind of one of those like 51-49 sort of deals, but they knew that they were going to be asked about Jordan Walker going in. They knew that was probably going to be the first question. The dude was supposed to be a superstar, and he's got a sub-600 OPS. Like, of course, they're going to be asked about Jordan Walker. So I do think there was some you know, a calculated measure there. And yeah, just like a couple years ago with the Tyler O'Neill thing, I think it was very calculated by Oliver Marmol. I think it was something that there was some frustration inside of the clubhouse a couple years ago with O'Neill, and Ali was saying something that some of the veteran players wanted him to say when it came to the O'Neill thing. That was my takeaway on it. My takeaway on this one is somewhat similar. I don't know how much it's connected, maybe players being frustrated or not, but I do think there was some level of calculation here. I think they knew they were going to say that. And we would be naive to say that, you know, Ricky Horton was talking about this, I believe, on the broadcast yesterday or 2 days ago, how Whitey Herzog communicated through the media all the time. So it's not something that I love seeing managers do. I think it's something that you try to, you know, have the direct communication first. But is there a time and a place to use the media if you're a manager or a hitting coach or whatever? Yeah, there is. And I would just, my sense, my feeling is they knew that message was one message that they were going to use. Ronj, not to throw this back on you, but you were doing the interview with them. Do you agree or disagree in the sense that it seems somewhat calculated?
Yeah, I don't think they were at all surprised. And maybe wanted to get it out there. And yeah. I got the sense.
Like not a slip of the tongue.
No, yeah. Absolutely not. Because they were very intentional about it. And my sense is this is a last resort kind of thing. Where if this is the first tactic they use, where they go to the press and complain about a player, that might be a little eyebrow raising. But I don't think that's what this is. I think this was they've tried to deliver the message, and it just hasn't gotten through, so what are you going to do? This is it. You go to the press, maybe get that attention on it, maybe it does light a little bit of a fire in him, and, you know, hope you get good results out of it. But at some point, he's got to take responsibility. If all of the things they're talking about, if all those things are actually happening or not happening, he has to take responsibility for them.
And it's also important, at the end of the day, they're doing everything they can to get this guy to turn into a really good baseball player. I mean, if he just would have better swing decisions and better pitch recognition, he would be an all-star caliber player. He's got one of the fastest swings in all of Major League Baseball. When he makes contact, he hits the living you know what out of it. He is not like, it's so funny to say he of the 250 or so qualified players, he's in like the bottom 5, bottom 10. So he is literally one of the single worst hitters in all of Major League Baseball. Yet you can look at him and say he is a couple small tweaks away from being one of the most impactful players in all of Major League Baseball. So if I'm a fan listening to this and I know the entire context around it, my first take is it's not that, hey, I'm going to be mad at Oliver Marmol or I'm going to be mad at Brent Brown because this is inappropriate that they're talking about this publicly. My takeaway is these guys are doing everything. They keep going down the list of things that they can do to help this guy, and this is the next thing on the list because they're trying to unlock a really, really impactful baseball player who just can't get out of his own way right now.
Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock and Sports Open Line at 6 o'clock tonight with our guy, Matt Pauly. Matt, we appreciate you as always, buddy.
You bet. Thank you.
Yo, Pauly, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
Cardinals are off tonight, obviously, because we are at the Ted Savage Cardinals Care Golf Classic, where many of the Cardinals are here, actually, playing in this particular event. So we are live at Whitmore Country Club. We are glad you are with us. And we think you should put your phone down, no matter where you are.
Well, okay, you can turn on the Odyssey app and then
Odyssey
put
app
your
only.
Phone down.
That's correct.
And then pick it up to leave us a voice message with the voice message feature on the KMOX page on the Odyssey app.
But there is an establishment that will not let you use your cell phone, and it's not a school.
It's not a school.
It's kind of interesting. We'll talk about that next on KMOX.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There is a bar in Washington, D.C. that is going phone free. Chef Rock Harper of Hell's Kitchen fame has a bar in the H Street corridor. The bar is Hill Prince. And Rock Harper, the chef, has like personally been experimenting with giving up technology. He traded in his smartphone for a flip phone. And this Friday, so in just a couple of days, or tomorrow actually, tomorrow, that bar, Hill Prince in Washington, D.C., will be called Hush Harbor. And you cannot bring your phone into Hush Harbor. It is a phone-free bar. This is how strict they are. Every patron who walks in has to put their phone in one of those yonder magnetic
pouches. Yes.
Where your phone is locked up, and then they keep it. You keep your phone locked up and you're not allowed to use it. You carry it with you, but then you have to have it unlocked to go use it. And he said he's gotten a ton of pushback that nobody's going to want to come to this bar where you have to lock up your phone. And he believes otherwise. He said he's experimented with different phone-free nights or trying to discourage technology. And people love it. They talk. They're not constantly being tempted to look at their screen or feeling the phantom buzzes from their phones.
Would you do it? I don't know if I like this. How am I supposed to coordinate with people I'd rather be with than the people I'm with in the moment?
Well, that's the
thing. What if I want to go somewhere different? I want to text like, hey, are you guys having more fun than where I am?
It's funny because that you use the phrase in the moment because that's why he's doing it. You're stuck in the moment. He wants you to be fully present.
There's a U2 song about this, stuck in a moment and can't get out of it.
That's what it is. And he also said that there is no negotiation on using your phone inside, barring an emergency, quote, that ain't happening. And so, yeah, you literally put your phone in a yonder pouch as you go into the bar. And I would say this, you probably don't want to do that all the time.
I
don't think we'd want every restaurant to be phone free.
No.
But I like this idea. Getting together with friends that you haven't seen in a while, or maybe family, and saying, let's go to Hush Harbor. Let's lock up our phones and let's just be super present. It takes the pressure off of you to, you're not using willpower now to look at your phone or to avoid looking at your phone because it is an addiction. And I was talking to Kevin Wheeler and he said, well, just don't look at your phone. And I'm like, well, I get it.
That's a Kevin Wheeler thing.
Yeah, just don't look at your phone. You're an adult. And I know I'm an adult and I know I cannot look at my phone, but if it's there, I'll look at it. I really do have some kind of an addiction.
Yeah.
It's a habit. How many times have you been watching TV and you realize, oh, I'm on my phone, and you missed what happened because you were on your phone?
Oh.
How many times have you been looking at Twitter on your computer, and then you pull up Twitter on
that
your phone?
That I do a lot.
Because
it truly
is an addiction. It's a habit. And to me, it's the same thing as a willpower. The idea, it takes character, yes, to want to deny yourself and so forth. But willpower is a muscle, not a character trait. Like, the more honest you are, if you're honest all day, every day, you don't get tired of being honest and go, man, I just need to lie. But with willpower, you do get tired of saying no to cake and no to sugar and no to treats and no to your phone. So willpower is a muscle that fatigues. And if you can take the pressure off of you, just put your phone away, out of sight, out of mind, I do think it's easier.
It's not all willpower. I think it's really difficult to do that. And I completely agree with you on that. And I also agree that I would not – maybe I'd try it out. maybe I try it out if you're with certain people, you know, family, certain friends, a friend you haven't seen in a long time,
a lady friend,
and you would like to just have it be the two of you.
Yeah,
yeah, great. I think that would be awesome. I think it's better in, like, concert settings. Mm-hmm. For example, Jack White is one of those people who does that. There's a comedian, it might have been Chappelle.
So I actually went to John Mulaney's concert.
And he does the same thing.
Show at Enterprise. And yes, we had to put our phone in the magnetic pouches. And I actually thought it would really slow up the entry and exit, and it did not.
Wasn't that bad,
It's very efficient.
I think in a case like that, it's better. I like that. You know, you're at a concert. It's only going to be a couple of hours. There's a show in front of you. Mm-hmm. Watch the show. Watch the show with your eyes. Yeah, okay, it's great. Get your phone out and record it and then go post it on Instagram later. Those videos suck, by the way. They absolutely suck. I took a bunch of photos and videos at the Oasis concert. A bunch, but a handful. I didn't post any of them because they all look bad.
It's kind of dorky at this point because everybody posts the concert photos.
Right. Everybody does it. So it doesn't do anything for me.
And I mean, I still
me.
Do it sometimes. And,
yeah, I do too, just to prove that I was there, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think if I was told that I couldn't do it and then nobody else could do it, great. I'm with you. But I think bars and restaurants, it's a little different. I don't know how much I'd like it, but I guess I'd try it out once.
Yeah. We babysat when we couldn't get a hold of our parents because I know a big question is, well, what if you've got kids at home? And I get that concern, but I also understand that somehow every generation before this generation has managed to babysit for 2 hours without constant contact with their parents.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. No, they've managed
to. Sounds really hard-hearted. I get it. But I if you go on a long run and you don't have your phone, or your parents are hiking, they don't have a phone or they don't have service, I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world to be unavailable for 2 hours.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. There are certain people I love to be unavailable to.
Steve.
Oh, Steve. Boy,
he's our boss.
He's a serial texter. Our boss.
3 a.m,
My
5
God.
In the morning.
Mike, he doesn't sleep. You know another guy who doesn't sleep? It's a guy who works very hard. It's Major Garrett, Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News, and he joins us next on KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Major News with Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's Chief Washington Correspondent.
Also host of the Takeout on CBS News 24/7, it is Major Garrett, who joins us every 10:30 or every Thursday at 10:30 or just after here on 104.1 FM KMOX. We are joined by Major right now. How's it going, our friend?
It's great. Good to see you. I mean, not good to see you, but good to hear you. And I understand you're at a country club having grapes peeled for you and lattes served up every half hour, stuff like that.
Yeah, yes. How'd you know? Isn't that what you normally get at the CBS HQ?
We were trying to run into you, Major, and we thought, where would Major be? Probably a country club.
Yeah, I'm a real country club type, no doubt.
Well, Major, how about this? We are halfway to Columbia, you know, where you went to college. So
yes.
If you wanted to visit your old school, you could stop by here at the Whitmore
excellent,
Country Club.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, I hope it's a wonderful day for you both.
Oh, it's beautiful. 65 degrees, couldn't
beautiful.
Be better. So, Major, today, RFK Jr. testifying before a Senate panel about vaccine policy and the changes there and the CDC stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. Well, what do we know today?
So the main reason he came to appear was to talk about the president's Make America Healthy agenda, but quickly senators got him on vaccines because of the turmoil at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Susan Monterez, who was nominated by the president, backed by RFK Jr., confirmed by the Senate, sworn in on July 31st by RFK Jr., was fired within less than a month because of a dispute over the direction of vaccine policy. And she has an op-ed, Dr. Susan Monterrens, in the Wall Street Journal this morning that basically says, because I wouldn't buckle under and I demanded scientific evaluation of everything we were going to do in the vaccine space, I was sacked. And now children in America are going to get, and their parents, confusing, mildly, or maybe even worse, dangerous misinformation, she said, her words not mine, about vaccines. And RFK Jr. defended his action, said that some of the statements in the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal are lies. But even Republicans, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, I just saw Senator Barrasso, Tom Barrasso from Wyoming, John Barrasso from Wyoming, say they're concerned about the direction of statements from HHS and CDC under RFK Jr.'s leadership about vaccines. And this is now spilling over into states. Florida yesterday announced it's going to ban all vaccine mandates, even for vaccines for children, MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, smallpox. And this creates a new dimension for parents, for children, for school teachers, because if you take away those vaccines, you are going to, health experts say, increase the likelihood of diseases this country thought it had largely, if not completely, eradicated. And so this is, I think, a new pressure point for the Make America Healthy agenda, because a lot of other things, food dyes, seed oils, chemicals in food, which I think have broad bipartisan support or broad bipartisan curiosity and skepticism about, are getting washed away because of this anti-vaccine initiative that RFK Jr. seems to be not only comfortable with, but accelerating.
Major, where do you see this country in 5 or 10 years when it comes to these talks about healthcare or vaccines? Because obviously we've swung so far in this direction with RFK and banning vaccine mandates in Florida. We had the COVID vaccine that, I mean, for a lot of times during the COVID pandemic, absolutely there were errors, and I would say misleading errors in messaging, right? Whether the Surgeon General said you should wear masks or not wear masks.
Right,
Operation
right.
Warp Speed was Trump's, but then somehow now, you know, a lot of the Trump contingent doesn't like the vaccine. There were shutting down businesses, but then, you know, protests and marches for the George Floyd were allowed. And so people got bitter
yes,
and resentful.
Yes, absolutely.
How do you fix that? Because I can see why people were frustrated, but it swung far the other way.
Right. So I think you've described it perfectly, Amy. There was frustration and people felt that they had lost any sense of control, that there was a deference, possibly a misplaced deference to experts and expertise. And then they began to wonder, was there a political agenda behind it? And there were evidentiary trails that suggested in some cases there were. And so they listen to and they appreciate hearing RFK Jr. saying, I'm going to take all the politics out of science. And yet he fired everyone on a vaccine advisory panel, replaced them with anti-vaxxers. So that just looks like a different kind of politics masquerading as pure science or gold standard science. So there does seem to be this pendulum swing in the other direction because people had such, not everyone, but a certainly sizable portion of our country had a negative reaction to what came their way and what was either mandated or close to mandated during COVID. And the swing in the other direction, like I said, is spilling over. I mean, there was not a conversation in our country pre-COVID at all about eliminating vaccine mandates for standardized, long-accepted childhood vaccinations in any school district in our country, let alone an entire state. Now there is. And I think that pendulum swing, which started with skepticism, then sort of morphed into hostility, has now moved into a kind of blanket dismissal of things that we know we have mounds of data that show work. And we're like, no, let's wipe that away too. I mean, Florida is an enormously large state, and what Florida does about vaccines will radiate to other red states. I guarantee you, don't be surprised if in Missouri someone in the legislature starts saying, why don't we do what Florida did? Why don't we get rid of mandates, you know?
Yeah, I'll be more surprised if it doesn't happen here.
Precisely. And so these pendulum swings matter in politics because they influence policy and they influence the way people think about things. And I know as a parent, when I was raising my three kids, I was very glad that we had these vaccine mandates for things that we knew worked because they maintained a core level of safety for all children, because there are enough things that kids get, ear infections and all sorts of other things, that you can't control. But if you can control these big, scary things, chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis, things like that, you want to have those baseline protections there. And if suddenly states start saying, you know what, let's just play roulette with that, well, that creates all sorts of uncertainties where we don't need those uncertainties. To be skeptical of and unhappy with a COVID is one thing. To take that skepticism and hostility to things that we know work and have worked feels like, and based on the conversation, even from Republicans with RFK Jr. today in the Senate Finance Committee, indicated there's some misgivings about the direction all of this is taking.
Major, meanwhile, the National Guard has been in D.C. for weeks now. The president has said he's going to send them to Chicago next, maybe next week, early next week. The D.C. has sued the Trump administration over this. There's a story in CNN that morale is low among National Guard troops because they don't really know what they're doing there. So what's going to happen here moving forward? Because it looks like it will expand to other cities beyond Chicago.
It's interesting. The president has been in a lot of different rhetorical spots on this just this week. So on Tuesday, he was pretty aggressive about sending the National Guard to Chicago. Then yesterday, he said, you know what, I think I may send them to New Orleans. Why? Because the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, longtime Trumpist, has said he's open to it. And the president said, his words, not mine, that he was rethinking Chicago. Because the simple truth is this. He has latitude in Washington, D.C. because it's a federal district. He does not have legal latitude in any state in this union to send in the National Guard absent something he can assert is a crisis. Like in Los Angeles, he said there was some threat to a federal building. That gave him at least a fig leaf of legitimacy. Federal courts have said that fig leaf didn't actually exist, but at least gave it in the moment. There is no way that a president can say, you know what, I don't like the crime in City X, and therefore I'm going to federalize the National Guard and send them in. There is no legal authority to do that. And that's abundantly clear. There's latitude in the District of Columbia because it is a federal district. It's not a state. There is a melding of district power and federal power in the nation's capital. That melding doesn't exist anywhere else. But in Louisiana, if the Republican governor says, I'd like the National Guard to come here, I would be open to that, then there are fewer legal hurdles to get over. So yesterday, just yesterday afternoon, the president, I'm kind of rethinking Chicago. So I don't know what's going to happen in Chicago or Baltimore or some of these other places he's name-checked. But New Orleans, if the governor of Louisiana has his way, it may happen there next. There are two issues here. What are the legal limits of a president? And what does this country do and think about crime control generally? Historically, we have left that up to states and municipalities. The president said earlier this week, no president's done what I've done before on this. Well, yeah, there's a reason for that. You don't have the legal right to do it. And guess what, Mr. President? You don't want to become the mayor of every big city in this country. You know why? Because it's a hard job, and you're the president of the United States, a big enough job already.
Major, speaking of governors and political trends, what do you make of Gavin Newsom kind of Trumpifying the way he tweets and speaks the media? I'm looking at his Twitter feed now. There's him like AI as George Washington or shirtless with a bear. There's him holding a at baby Trump and putting a baby Trump in jail. It's very, I mean, I had to make sure this was actually Gavin Newsom's account, but he's kind of playing that Trumpian game of hurling mud at the other side. So what do you make of that?
So it's been an interesting transformation, and it's all occurred in the space of less than 6 months. It was only 4 months ago that Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor of California, was booking on his podcast every right-wing figure he could, Steve Bannon and the like, to try to get to know them better. And he decided that there was very limited political utility in doing that. Maybe it was just a gesture. Maybe it was an effort to say, I want to hear more. And then he took the hard turn back to the left, where he always has been. But this most recent endeavor is to try to do something that Democrats to this point had never done, which is, I'm not going to either dismiss or say how outrageous Trump is or say how stupid he is or how caustic he is or toxic. No. I'm going to mimic Trump, occupy the same space, so that becomes my way of satirizing the president. That becomes my way of trolling him instead of constantly feeling, as Democrats have in the entire Trump era, trolled only by Trump. And all of their reaction to it falling on deaf ears. Gavin Newsom has decided the way to operate in the Trump space is to mimic Trumpian social media content to a T. And he's done, I would say, because it's an easy thing to mock. It's so simple. It's kind of elementary, possibly, in its presentation. Be as simple and as elementary as Trump in order to say that space is no longer original. Anyone can do it, and I can do it just as well as he can, or just as poorly, depending on your point of view. And it has been the only thing, I think, in the social media space that's come from any Democrat that has had any long-term stickiness to it, meaning people keep talking about it. One post can last for 2 or 3 days. Only Trump was able to do that for the longest time. Now Gavin Newsom is starting to get in that game.
Major Garrett, we appreciate you very much. We can't wait to see you, and we assume you're on the way to Whitmore.
I'll be delivering your latte shortly.
Oh, you know what?
Thank you.
It's about time you brought us something. After everything we've done for you.
After everything you've done for me, no doubt. No doubt.
Right.
I get the list every week.
Major Garrett, you're the best. Thank you.
Talk to you next week.
Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News. Watch his show, The Takeouts, CBS News 24/7. You can also listen to it as a podcast as well. It's the Chris and Amy Show. When we come back, did you see this on KMOX?
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Ranch Gabrielle Wall. She's a woman from New Zealand, and she holds the record for the fastest person ever for the 100-meter run.
Okay.
Over Legos. Completely barefoot.
What?
Here is a video of Gabrielle Wall from New Zealand running 100 meters, the 100-meter dash.
Barefoot.
Barefoot over
Legos.
And when I say Legos, I mean these Legos are densely poured, arranged over the entire lane.
She's on a track.
She's surrounded by cameras. You know, the Guinness Book of World Records. You have to make it very official. All the Guinness people are there. She did it in 24.75 seconds, and she is doing a full barefoot sprint over not a few scattered Legos. I mean, every inch of that lane is covered in Legos.
I hate this woman.
Oh my god.
Why did she discover she could do this?
I don't know. I mean, and you can tell she's in pain.
So she's at home. She's got a kid or something.
She's got to have a bunch of kids.
She has a bunch of kids. She steps on Legos. She goes, you know, that doesn't even hurt. I bet I can run down a track full of Legos and
are flying up as she runs over.
I hate this woman.
Her focusing through the pain.
And
you don't realize how long 100 meters of Legos is until you see 100 meters of Legos densely packed, covering an entire lane of a track.
I am sick of this woman.
Well,
I don't like her.
I don't know what to tell you. Would you like some good news?
Well, I've got some good news. What do you have?
Well, I have that the UK grocery chain Tesco.
Yeah.
It is testing some new technology. Avocado ripeness scanner.
Oh, that's not a bad thing to have.
So shoppers can now see if the avocado that they're using is the perfect
ripeness. Or about to buy.
Ripeness. But the thing is, you can kind of tell by feeling an avocado. An avocado is one of the few fruits that
honestly,
is easy to tell if it's ripe or not.
One of my favorite things in the world to do is grope the avocados at the store.
You know what? When you say it like that, I feel violated.
I love it.
I feel between Fred Bird and you, it's been a very harassy day. Fred Bird didn't do anything inappropriate.
Fred Bird, no, he's just been dropping scones and
bringing us
water.
Yeah. You know how he eats your head? Like
yeah,
he
hasn't done it.
Beak.
He hasn't eaten my head in a while.
Puts his beak on your big dumb head.
Yeah, I thought he only did that to me when I was a kid. Turns out he does it to everybody.
Well, anyway,
cheater.
So Tesco is seeing if avocados are ripe. I feel like you can kind of tell that, but.
Amy, you know how much I love the pitch clock. I think it's one of the greatest things of any sports league has ever done. It has finally implemented some real pace into the game of baseball. The numbers, and this is from a Twitter account called Codify Baseball. It's a really good Twitter account if you are a baseball fan to follow. So since the pitch clock has been implemented, the amount of 3-plus-hour games, you know, the slow, death march of a baseball game. 17% of the games in 2023 lasted more than 3 hours. 12% last year. It's at 15% now. So the pitch clock is working.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was in 2022? What percentage of games went over 3 hours?
73.
60.
Wow.
Before that, it was 67.
Yeah.
But if you go back to like 2003, it was only about 28%. In the 80s, we are back now to games lasting about as long as they did in the 80s.
So wasn't it 2 games ago that the Cardinals game was an hour and 55 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
That's insane.
It's great. And you know what?
That's insane. That's quicker than a hockey game.
St. Charles native Mark Burley
routinely
used to throw 2-hour games.
Really?
Amazing. He'd get the ball and throw it.
That's because he had to hurry up
it.
To get back to Whitmore.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.